Here's the latest audio research news from The Transmitter. Martin Jurfa's Concept of Home by Gina Jimenez. In 1990, when Martin Jurfa was living in Freiburg, Germany, the locals did something he had never seen before. One day a month, they pulled unwanted possessions from their homes and left them out on the street for anyone to take. They called this purging Sperrmüll. Walking the early morning streets with his wife and Argentinian friends, Jurfa saw televisions, washing machines, and freezers, he says, all pulled to the curb. Once, they even spotted a pressure cooker, which they claimed. Jurfa and his wife, Gabriela de Brito Sanchez, who is also a biologist, used Sperrmüll to help outfit their home. Jurfa had come to Germany from Argentina to work as a postdoc in the lab of the renowned neuroscientist Randolph Menzel. He had heard rumors of Sperrmüll before his arrival, but seeing it in person, he says he realized that it happened because Germany was a rich country, where people bought new things they wanted and simply discarded the old. It surprised Jurfa to see a similar dynamic playing out in university labs. His German colleagues sometimes threw away perfectly usable, albeit outdated, equipment that Argentinians would dream of working with, he says. It was hard to just watch it all go out with the trash. Eventually, Jurfa joined a group of Argentinian researchers that had formed an alternative work-based Sperrmüll. They snapped updated computers and other lightly worn equipment, including intricate devices that German scientists had used to record the movements of honeybees, and sent them to Argentina for researchers there. Later, Jurfa would lay the foundation for a new understanding of insects' cognitive abilities. His insight was revolutionary and sent the whole study of insect intelligence on a new path, says Lars Chitka, a doctoral student at Menzel's lab when Jurfa was there, and now a psychology professor at Queen Mary University of London. But in those early years, Jurfa was just another young researcher who had gone abroad in search of scientific challenges and found himself still thinking of the people back home. The truth is, Martin Jurfa is not Argentinian by birth. His Argentinian mother, hard-headed as she was, he says, married a Peruvian man and followed him back to Lima, where Jurfa was born and raised. His father left when Jurfa was only 2, but his mother refused to go back to Argentina. She wanted to become more independent. Instead, she got a job at a bank and put her son in a private French school to make him bilingual. She also signed him up for anything she thought would feed his mind. Painting, languages, music classes. She provided him with what, in neuroscience, we call environmental enrichment, Jurfa says. Because he linked Peru to the father who abandoned him, Jurfa rejected his birth country during his early years and always planned to leave. But growing up in Peru did have its perks. Back then, it was only a short drive from Lima to the beach or the mountains, which put him in contact with the natural world and with insects. Biologists become biologists for many different reasons, he says. The ones like me did it because we love bugs. Still, his mother constantly reminded him he was Argentinian. She bought him Argentinian comics and sports magazines. She also sent him to Argentina to visit his uncle and extended family. To hear his mother talk about it, Argentina was a kind of promised land, he says. You will need to go there one day, she told him, because that is our place in the world. But when he moved to Argentina in 1980 to study biology for undergrad at the University of Buenos Aires, the country was not the paradise he had hoped for. Argentina had already been under a military dictatorship for nearly 5 years by then, and soldiers watched the university's entrance, inspecting students' backpacks as they arrived. There were no student activities in the hallways, and you could get in trouble for simply playing guitar on campus, Jurfa says. The school had also become an ideological battleground. Professors from the biology department denied the theory of evolution. The new government slashed the university's student quotas and radically transformed the curriculum of humanities majors. It was also physically dangerous. Between 1976 and 1983, the military dictatorship years, more than 600 students at the school disappeared, approximately 60 of them from the department Jurfa also attended. Perhaps because he was raised in another country, and thereby naive to the true danger, he says, Jurfa became a leader in the underground student movement. He and his university friends organized protests and graffitied walls, activities that could have gotten him arrested or even killed. Nowadays, I think about how unaware I was, he says. Hundreds of scientists left Argentina during the dictatorship period and the years leading up to it. But when the military regime fell in 1983, some began to return. One of them, a prestigious neurobiologist named Hector Maldonado, wanted to transform the University of Buenos Aires biology faculty and its curriculum, which at the time had just two branches, botany and zoology. With the help of other returning professors, Maldonado established courses in microbiology, ecology, molecular biology, cellular biology, and evolution. As a student, Jerfa was fascinated by his school's transformation. Suddenly, he could learn about all these new fields, and the information overload was enough to blow your mind, he says. Jerfa, who had been elected student leader of the biology department, worked closely with Maldonado to promote some of these changes. But he had been taught that scientists were supposed to be in their ivory towers, preoccupied with their research and nothing else, he says. He understood that it wasn't like that by looking to Maldonado. From him, Jerfa would later write, he learned that the best science, the excellent science, wasn't in conflict with political commitment. In 1990, Jerfa finished his biology PhD in Buenos Aires with a core focus on insect behavior. During his course, Josue Nunez, an Argentinian neurobiologist who had returned from Germany and became Jerfa's mentor, pushed him to publish in international journals, which wasn't common in Argentina at the time. Once Jerfa had published work in the Journal of Insect Physiology, though, he landed on the radar of Menzel, the biggest name in honeybee neuroscience from the last 40 years, says Jean-Christophe Sandeau, a neuroscientist at Paris-Saclay University and one of Jerfa's mentees. When Menzel invited Jerfa to move to Germany to work with him, it was like playing football on an amateur team and suddenly being called to play in the Champions League with Bayern Munich or Manchester City, Jerfa says. At first, Jerfa struggled to fit in. The German culture felt staid to him, serious, the opposite of the Latin American culture he grew up in. He felt like the foreigner he was, and Germany wasn't exactly welcoming to foreigners back then, he says. His mailbox, the only one in his housing complex with a foreign last name, was kicked in and dented more than once. He fixed the problem, he says, by painting doctor in front of his name on the box. Jerfa felt like an outsider in the lab, too. He had never, for instance, seen the computers his colleagues felt so comfortable working with. And the lab was competitive. His colleagues seemed to prefer working alone. He discovered that offering help to others fostered a more collaborative environment, and eventually his colleagues became his friends. Menzel recognizes Jerfa's cooperative nature. He is not just focused on himself, but he looks out and he takes this kind of knowledge to help other people, he says. Still, Jerfa wanted to ask his own questions. Most of the postdocs or doctoral students in Menzel's lab were assigned a specific project that could contribute to Menzel's research questions, Chitka says. But Jerfa wanted to know what might be possible with tiny bee brains, what minimal circuitry could still generate intelligent behavior. With Menzel's blessing, Jerfa investigated whether bees were able to discriminate between differing visual stimuli based only on symmetry. He first trained bees with symmetrical and asymmetrical figures, offering a sugar reward only when they encountered symmetrical figures. And when he later presented the bees with a new setup and different figures, they approached the symmetrical figures for the sugar reward. Jerfa and his team also ran the experiment backward, with the reward associated with asymmetrical figures, and the bees mastered that, too. The experiment showed not only that bees could learn rules, but also that they could categorize objects that had nothing in common except symmetry, a perception previously demonstrated only in humans, birds, dolphins, and monkeys. Later, Jerfa conducted an experiment in which bees saw a visual stimulus, a color or a pattern, outside a maze, and received a drop of sugar if they approached the same stimulus inside. The stimulus changed every time, so it was not enough for insects to associate the stimulus with the reward. They needed to learn the rule and remember the pattern, and the bees did. This study became a landmark paper in the field. Recently, Jerfa published a paper showing that after being trained to associate numbers with a sugar reward, bees can order numbers from left to right according to their magnitude. That paper sparked disagreement among colleagues. This kind of response is not new. Chitka says that some of Jerfa's earlier findings were shocking enough that people didn't believe them at first, and Jerfa himself remembers being questioned by older researchers earlier in his career. I just kept going, he says. In 2001, after 10 productive years in Menzel's lab, Jerfa had an offer to create a new research institute in Toulouse, France. On his first visit there, While waiting for the bus, he saw an old lady shouting and waving her walking stick at a bus driver for almost leaving without her. This reminded him of Latin America more than Germany ever did, he says, and he remembers thinking, I am back in Argentina. He and his wife had two daughters by then, and they also felt France could be good for them. In Toulouse, Jerfa expanded on a new area of learning paradigms that showed how rich cognitive levels are in honeybees, Menzel says. He also showed correlations between olfactory stimuli and patterns of neural activity in honeybees. And tapping into his powers of collaboration, Jerfa built the new institute focused on learning the mechanisms of cognitive processing in different animals. The job required coordinating researchers from across fields with varied expertise, but that suited Jerfa, Sando says. He has always wanted to get the best out of people. Once the institute was up and humming, Jerfa moved to Sorbonne University, where he was hired as an exceptional class professor of neuroscience, the highest rank in French academia. In 2013, Jerfa received the Raisis Award, a prize awarded by the Argentinian Senate to scientists who live abroad but still work to strengthen Argentinian science. Raíces means roots in Spanish, and indeed, Jerfa is still thinking of his homeland. Jerfa has managed to create a kind of Sperrmüll of his own. When he visits Argentina now, he packs into his suitcase reagents or small tools, like electrodes or data loggers, that he can distribute to Argentinian neuroscientists. Gabriela de Brito Sanchez does the same. Walter Farina, a neuroscientist at the University of Buenos Aires and a longtime friend of the couple, has been a direct beneficiary of this. He and De Brito Sanchez are studying the neuronal pathways associated with attention and motivation in honeybees. De Brito Sanchez brings reagents to Argentina, and we run the experiments here, Farina says. They are not the only ones doing this. Argentina's geographical location, regulatory restrictions, and skyrocketing inflation, over 200% last year, make getting supplies difficult and expensive. When Argentinian José Duarte, a behavioral neuroscientist at the Leloir Institute in Buenos Aires, flew back home after his postdoc in Philadelphia, he says he hid several tubes of male and female fruit flies and their larvae in his suitcase. And when Pedro Beckenstein, a neurobiologist at the Institute of Cognitive and Translational Neurosciences, part of the INECO Foundation, in Buenos Aires, returned from a research stay in Brazil, he says he brought rat brains packed in dry ice with him so he could do work back home. But the old problems in Argentina are nothing compared to what they are seeing now, Beckenstein says. In April, thousands of Argentinians protested government budget cuts to science and education. The government had not adjusted university budgets to keep pace with inflation. Funding organizations such as the National Agency for the Promotion of Research, Technological Development, and Innovation hadn't transferred research grants to scientists or allocated funding since December of last year, Farina said. Aidea Viola, a neurobiologist at the University of Buenos Aires, who is working with Jerfa to transfer insect memory models to vertebrates, has been using her own money to pay for her lab rat's food. Jerfa says he worries that the funding cuts and the government's attitude towards science could bring a massive exodus of scientists, the same way the Videla dictatorship did when he was a student. Jerfa and Farina say it's already happening. Last year, 1,900 young researchers applied to become part of Argentina's National Council of Scientific and Technical Research. This year, only 1,300 did. That means there are 600 who decided to change careers or look for a job somewhere else, Farina says. We have to rethink again if life as a scientist and researcher makes sense in Argentina. Home, for Jerfa, might seem like a nebulous concept. He has lived in Peru, Argentina, Germany, and now France, where he became a citizen in 2016. He loves the country and feels comfortable there, in his personal life, in ways he never did in Germany. But in truth, Argentina is always on his mind. Every morning, he reads his favorite Argentinian newspaper before the French one, and though his two daughters were raised in Europe, one has moved to Argentina, and the other alternates between Mexico and Argentina. Even his mother eventually returned, back in 1986, to the folds of her family. She died 2 years ago in Buenos Aires at 98 years old. And Jerfa himself plans to one day return to Argentina, or at least Latin America, for good. My roots are there, that's undeniable, he says. I am not a rootless person. I have culture, affections, a way of talking and being. Those don't simply go away.